Good morning, everyone, and thank you for hanging in there. My name is Lene Ampersand, and today I'm going to be presenting on No Heart Left Behind. And what it is a successful delivery model of nutritional, mental nutritional, and cardiovascular health messages to both teens and adults. We have done this program, well, before I start, I want to just say that I have no relationships to disclose. And I wanted to acknowledge the presenters and author, the presentation authors, my colleagues who I've worked with on this program, and then also we have several people to acknowledge. We've done this program in school districts and, of course, Christiana Care Health System, who I work for, and AstraZeneca Foundation, and there's the several other school districts that we worked with. So when we think about No Heart Left Behind, sort of pun off of that, you know, just thinking of a battle that we have and making sure that we're taking care of our own. And so when we think about and go through on, you know, what our battle is, and, you know, our battle is not just the battle in Delaware, but it is across the nation. But when you think about cardiovascular disease, and, you know, you think about that it's the number one killer in men and women. You know, there's one in four deaths per year. And then also thinking about how, you know, it's not just, like I said, in Delaware, but it's across the U.S. And then also the mental health battle, the stigma. And when you have a stigma, you know, the barriers that it creates to for students, families, you know, people to get treatment. And you also have, you know, when you're thinking about working with teens, you know, a lot of times there's a barrier there because their parents don't want, you know, their business out there, so to speak. They don't want others to know what's going on at home. So that's also another barrier. And then when you look at nutritional barriers, a lot of times there's not local grocery stores down the street. You know, there's local corner stores, and those local corner stores usually have fresh produce, you know, and healthy choices, mostly not. And so that's a barrier along with the financial barriers as well. And so, you know, we're seeing this in a lot of, in our group, a lot of us are seeing, okay, how do we handle this? It's an ongoing theme, whether it's in the schools, whether it's in our other community programs. So we sat around and thought about how can we sort of attack this issue that we're seeing in so many areas of our programming. And, you know, when you take teens, for example, they have, there's so many different areas you can attack with teens. They have a lot of different areas to work with. And so, you know, we're thinking of that. But then even with your teens, there's not a lot of opportunity. You know, they're not in charge of the groceries a lot of times. And so, therefore, we had to include the adults. How can we affect the adults who are in their lives and help increase their knowledge? And, you know, so when we're thinking about all these different things, then sort of the birth of No Heart Left Behind was created. And Christiana Care was fortunate enough, we received funding for 3 years to develop a program to execute cardiovascular disease prevention for teens. And we partnered with our school-based health centers. Christiana Care, we operate 15 school-based health centers. So we partnered with that in the district. And then we developed a curriculum to sort of attack these battles. And the thing I love about the curriculum is because it's a multidisciplinary curriculum, a team approach. And so it's an 8-week program, and it's split. 1 week, the mental health provider would do a lesson, and the next week, the registered dietitian would do a lesson. And so it was a great mix of collaboration. And so, you know, then there's the fight, there's the battle, and we got in there, and we did this program with the teens. And the thing I love is, you know, you had your classroom piece, but then also for the adults, we had 4 evening adult classes that they had to partake in as well. And so with the adults, their first, you can see on the bottom, there's a picture. The first time that they came in, they had screening. So they would know their numbers. We had a sheet, know your number. So we would, you know, do their blood pressure, their BMI. We would check their blood sugar. But we really wanted them to know where their starting point was, you know, not just for our program, but for their overall health. It's important information for them to know. Another event that we did is at the top, we did a grocery store tour. And so that was a lot of fun, where the teen and their adult We took them on a tour of the grocery store, taught them to stay on the outside of the aisles and why that's important. And then we took them, the picture shows, in the freezer section, and we would ask them, you know, what choices would they normally make? And then we would teach them, well, what's the better choice? And we would show them, teach them how to read labels and show them so they can understand why that was the better choice. And we did a lot of other fun things. We did yoga and stress management. So it really was a collaboration. And the fun thing was that it started off with the teen and the adult, but the adults were learning so much that then the next event they would bring, you know, their sister or their neighbor or, you know, their cousin. And so it really ended up being a huge community event rather than the one-on-one, just the teen and their coach. And the teens, we did a pre and post test as well so that we were able to just really see the progress that they were making. And so in year one, that's when we introduced No Heart Left Behind to four schools in January 2012. And so we did the screenings, we did the health events, you know, we did the classes. And we also, Christiana Care has a summer program called Camp Fresh, and we incorporated in that in the summer. And so that was sort of our launching point. And then the next year, you know, we had lessons learned. So we had to sort of regroup and see what worked, what didn't, what are the areas that we can expand and increase on. And so that's what we did for our second year. We continued into those four schools, and we tweaked the curriculum a bit to meet the needs that we were seeing and address more of the areas that we felt needed it addressed. And we had a successful second year. And then our third year, we said, okay, let's expand. So we expand to three more schools, so a total of seven. And, you know, we took all the lessons learned, and we continue to just grow and grow and grow and make it more of a, started off on ours, but also we had a lot more feedback and evaluation, so we were able to even meet some of the needs that the parents and the teens were saying, oh, let's try this, let's do that. And so it's exciting how it really came to be. And so it was a successful program. Our fund to end it this year, but we continue to figure out ways on how to incorporate it with many other programming that we continue to do. And so for that three-year time, we reached over 5,000 adults and teen coaches. And again, you know, that number is high because it became a word of mouth and people look forward to it. And even if we didn't do one event, we heard about it. We were like, well, wait, we want to do that again. So it really became part of their yearly thing, an event to do. But then we tracked more than 600 adults and teens over the 3 years through our groups, and 96% of the teens and adults who participated in our No Heart Left Behind groups, they showed an increase of knowledge in the cardiovascular disease. So that also is gratifying as well, because you just don't want to do community events and programs and think, oh, that was a nice time. We really want to know that we are making a difference, which we found that we are. And so the teens, you know, there's an increase that they had, and it's always heartwarming for teens when there's a decrease in their fast food choices. That's excellent. But part of that is because we, part of our program, each time we had a group, we introduced them to healthy options and snacks, things they wouldn't have even tried. I learned what jicama was. I never even heard of jicama, but it's just things that they never heard of, or they might have heard of, but they were like, oh, I'm not wasting my money on that. But we allowed them to sample and taste, and they were able to see, yes, that I can do this. So part of that, in the picture that you show, they were making healthy salads. They actually were making a whole healthy meal, but it was just neat to see that, wow, I do like vegetables. That was one of the things that there are certain vegetables that they never thought that they would eat because they didn't know how to say it. But also the adults, they also had an increase in their daily servings of fruits and vegetables. And once you're taught on how easy it is, and if you chop things up, you could take it on the go. I mean, a lot of those little things, it really helps to show that, yes, I can eat healthy and be successful with it. Our teens in the picture there, you can see at top, at one of our schools, not only they, you know, we did a smoothie taste and they were like, oh, this is good. So let's, you know, let's share with our classmates. So one of the school allowed a tasting, and so you see like different students throughout the day, they would come and taste the smoothies that were made to show that, you know, healthy food can be good, and to get more on board. And then on the bottom, that's one of our activities when we were doing, we had a line dancing or just different Zumba activities that the students would do, but they really liked to do that. But it was really exciting, you know, here when it shows the decrease in consumption of sugary drinks. When you get teens to decrease sugary drinks, that's, you know, you're doing something. That's a battle right there. So our adults also, we had success with them, and I love some of the quotes that they said, that they're happy. I am happy to learn about foods with less fat. And that was a 48-year-old parent who suffered from congestive heart failure. One thing to know, a lot of our, some of our parents, they didn't know what their numbers were. And once we showed them and taught them, there were some of them that they had some serious health issues. And so we were able to make sure that they were connected with their PCP and get a lot of help. And they were very, very excited that we sort of made them more aware of what was going on with their body and their risk that they were at. Another comment was, I haven't had much time to participate in school-related things with my kids because of work. I work so much, but this program has been worth the time. I have a lot of stress, and exercise has helped me with that. And it was, I mean, a lot of our parents, some of our evening programs, you know, that's why we had dinner, they were coming straight from work, and, you know, they're working several jobs, and a lot of times they didn't have that one-on-one time with their child. So this program really created an opportunity where, you know, the parent can slow down, eat, the dinner was there for them, a healthy dinner, and then just learn together with their teen. I mean, one of the things that the teens had is they had homework assignments, and one of the assignments were it was together with their adults, so they had to go home and show what they were learning and partner with their adult to finish the homework assignments, whether it's cutting labels or answering questions about their family tree. That was another assignment that they were given, a family tree to find out their medical family tree and who has what medical issues in their family. So that was very eye-opening and interesting for the teens as well. So we have a lot of rewards. I mean, I'm very proud of the program. And our reward, so that's rewarding in itself, that we were able to make a difference, and we have demonstrated success in our community-based programming. And another reward is when creating a cardiovascular disease prevention program, we included this innovative student as coach model to deliver the messages. So that's exciting, that we help build the teens' confidence that, you know, they can make a difference, and that, you know, the adults can and will listen to them when they suggest different things from the grocery store that, oh, wow, they brought it home, so that's exciting. And then we focus on education targeting an underserved population, specifically family health, which could have a greater community impact if replicated in other settings. And we've definitely seen the difference of that when they're bringing their neighbors, their friends, everybody to the events that we do. So we do continue to develop ways to reach the teens, whether it's via social media. You know, we just really try to get the message out there. We continue to figure out different ways to incorporate this program into some of our other programs that we do throughout our health center. And then we also, we did develop a screening tool that is teen friendly, and we measured pre and post numbers at the start and at the end of our program series. And so these pictures just show a lot, you know, whether it's a camp, whether it's a bonding of the parent and the teen, or even in school, you know, the whole school got on board. So there's different areas that we were able to reach, different settings especially that we were able to reach and really make an impact and a difference in the community. And this time, I guess I can entertain any questions that anyone may have. The programming? Yes. Well, and the question was, you know, it was it a challenge to sort of get parents on board at a time and a team? Oh, for the teams to interact with their parents? Yeah, and well, the parent, we did get parent permission, so the parents had to sort of sign a permission slip, and the teams, so the teams knew that this program was a time for them to work with their parent. Now, I will say we did open it up for an important adult in their life, so if there's teens who didn't have a parent or it didn't limit them. They can choose who their adult was. But it wasn't as hard as, you know, in some different programmings where, you know, I can understand what you're saying, that it would be a challenge, but they knew that the goal was to help their family and their parents. And so as part of them signing on board to participate in the program, they knew that whatever challenges that they would have, that we would work through that, because part of the mental health piece is communication. We did a lot of different things that would help them through that barrier of working through some of the family issues or obstacles that they would have. Yes, and that is the whole model. Our No Heart Left Behind model is the student as coach model, and so that's the idea of the program, where the students know that they're the ones that are going to learn the lesson, but they're responsible for then working one-on-one with the adult, important adult in their life, and so they really have to take charge of it and figure out ways. Like one of the examples, we do role plays. Like if we taught them a lesson and they weren't comfortable or saying, "Oh, my mom's not going to listen to that," or "They're not going to do that," then we would take that opportunity in class and role play. How could you, you know, present this to your mom? Or, you know, then one of the things we would laugh. I was like, "Well, what would your mom say?" And the one kid said, you know, "Oh boy, go away," you know, and so, you know, and then I said, "Well, how would you, you know, if she said that, what would you do?" So it was kind of fun, because then they got to play the role of their parent and they thought that was funny. But it was a true lesson on really being able to help them, you know, see the humor in that, but then really, well, what do I do with that? Because a lot of times that's what, you know, with teens, they don't feel like their opinion's worth anything and they don't feel like they can make a difference. So that's one of those self-esteem areas that we targeted on. No, don't just walk away. There is a way that you can approach it, and we talk through that way. That's a lot. You're welcome. Any other questions? Thank you.
I just kind of like to open the floor for the whole panel. Any other questions for anyone on the panel?
Yeah, Ella had a question for you. Great presentation. The eight practices that you talked about in your presentation, you may have said this for instance, but how were those chosen, and were there some funding or incentives for them to participate?
So incentives, we brought along Starbucks gift cards with us and kind of handed those out very generously, so but it totally did not accommodate for their time. They really have this commitment to helping us learn. And they were identified through, we convened an expert panel to help guide the project, and that had 15 representatives from across the country, and they were part of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, NIAC, which is the National Academy for Integrated Care. And so we used a bit of a snowball sampling technique to identify the practices, and then we conducted a phone interview with them and had a criteria checklist that embedded them with the panel.
Any other questions for the panel?
Can I make one comment?
Oh, sure.
There is a new report out just this week from the National Academies on integrating and coordinating investments for children. And there were a set of recommendations in there. I read it this week as I was finalizing our slides, but I thought in listening to your presentation and then some of the points made in ours that the recommendations are very interesting because they align very much with the things that were done here. The importance of universalizing essential child services. So I mean, this could apply to adults too, but that these are provided across the board, and that in integration, it's important to tie things together at a local level as opposed to a central level, although it was important to make services linkable at a local level and flexible, but have the coordination and activities at the central level, like in the government agencies, as Debbie explained on the slide for My Child, lighter, that there are these coordinating bodies, but that the core integration is at the local level. Also, a recommendation for children was to keep home visiting interventions in the health sector and close interaction with parents through pediatric programs. And I was happy to see that because that was a core premise of My Child. But I'd recommend the report to anybody who's interested in these issues.
All right, any last questions?
On the Massachusetts project, the grant you had, I came in late, so I may have missed it, so please forgive me. There are a bunch of agencies having to do with care, especially if a child is adopted, it's mental health and the family department, whatever it's called, school districts as the child enters it. Did you deal with all those simultaneously? Did you get a memoranda of understanding before the grant was written, and how did you negotiate all this complexity then?
I don't know if you were here when I showed the slide that had the very complicated structures involved, and the one at the top was called the Young Children's Wellness Council, which was actually a required part of the other grant I talked about, but we used it to advise both, and it included the agencies responsible for the services that you're talking about. We didn't have formal memoranda of understanding, and you know, with the school district, in Boston, there's a lot of local school autonomy, so our ability to work with schools varied a lot. But the family partner at one of the sites, her focus was ended up being the development of a special ed clinic within the pediatric practice to advise parents on how to sort of carry out the integration into school. So those were really central issues for families. In the follow-up grants we've got, those relationships are more firmly established for exactly the reasons that you're talking about, that those become where kids live out their lives. And if you don't figure out how to influence the way they live their lives in those places, you're really going to undo whatever effective strategy you've had in pediatric primary care.
Can you say a word, please, about just how you go about doing that? Do you have frequent meetings, weekly, monthly, or
yes,
some sort of feedback from families that enter into those?
So the replication of My Child is happening in three cities across the state, and in each of those cities, we funded a position at the city health department to manage a coordinating team across those agencies. And in the planning, we had a planning period before the cities were all funded. They had to bring to the table their school district, a mental health provider, an early childhood provider, a pediatric clinic, and the city health department. And so those relationships were built in at the start. Some of the cities added other people, but that was the minimum. And so now they do have formal memoranda of understanding.
I just would add that I have some personal experience with that, with a grandson who's out in the western part of the state, and his parents have had to negotiate sometimes separately with different departments.
Yes. The state being Massachusetts?
Yes.
Any last questions? All right, thank you guys for attending, and thank our panelists.